a red flag always goes up to be assessing delirium first, because there are three different types of delirium. And often the ones that the staff are keenly aware of are the hyperdelirium patients. But really, the ones that we need to pay more attention to are those hypo or the mix.
Hello, and welcome to the Interior Health Nursing Grand Rounds, a podcast conversation. I am your host, Allison Thomas, and on this podcast, we talk all things nursing and healthcare. I work as the clinical nurse specialist in the Trauma Services Network in Interior Health. Interior Health would like to recognize and acknowledge the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territories of the Dakal Dene, Tanaha, Inglekatma, Shawepam, Statliam, Sioux, and Chukultin nations, where we live, learn, collaborate, and work together. Today, I'm so excited to introduce you to two very special nurse leaders in our region, and I'll ask them to introduce themselves. Maybe, Shannon, would you start?
Sure. Thanks, Allison, for having us. This is wonderful. So I'm Shannon Paul-Jost, and I'm a clinical nurse specialist in gerontology. And I live under the Senior Specialist Care Transformation Team and support long-term care primarily. And so I've been in this role for long-term care for about a year and a half, and as a CNS for about 6 years.
And last but certainly not least, Mary, could you tell us who you are and what you do?
Sure. So I'm Shannon's counterpart. So I'm the other clinical nurse specialist in gerontology within Interior Health. And I was just counting on my fingers how long I've been in this role. So in this role since 2009, so significant amount of time. And I'm also a nurse continence advisor. So that's the clinical component of my my clinical nurse specialist role.
You have both so graciously agreed to come on today and talk about a favorite subject, I think, of all of ours, and that is the older adult. So maybe could I start and check with you, is the older adult, is that the right terminology still? Is that how we are supposed to be referring to folks?
Sure. I wouldn't say, and Shannon, you can jump in here, of course, anytime. I wouldn't say there's any right way. We use a number of terms, older adult, senior, people that are in, at the end of their life. And I think that's a key component of an older adult assessment is to remember that these people are at the end of their lives. So the assessment and the interventions should reflect that.
Great. Okay. So maybe could we start with what is a geriatric assessment? Why does it matter to us as nurses and also to our patients? It's kind of a large question, but I'll put it out to both of you.
Sure. And I'll jump in here first. So I think the first part is, why is it important to assess this population different than the middle-aged adult population? And the key piece there is that they're different. They're different in all sorts of ways, and they're very different from a middle-aged adult population. A lot of the research that we've done has been on adults, has been the middle adult population, where, and we've often used people with very little variables for that research. Older adults have many variables affecting them. So they're not only different than the middle-aged adult population, but they're different from each other. So as you age, you become more heterogeneous. So you might have an older adult, you know, with a kidney function that you might expect of an older person, or you might have an older adult with a kidney function that would be better than mine. So that's the key piece to keep in mind, is that we can't use a recipe card for this patient population. You need to know the person, not only the normal age-related changes, but what's an age-related change and what's not. So the key differences is they're different in all from each other and from other populations. They're at the end of their, they're near the end of their lives, as we've all already talked about. And daily function is their number one priority. So we shouldn't be doing anything with interventions that we might expect with other populations that would impact their function. So crisis for them is often a crisis of function. Comfort is another overriding priority. So again, we shouldn't be often when we, and I'm talking using a broad term with we, healthcare providers, we get onto a trajectory of interventions, focusing on interventions, but mm-hmm. we shouldn't be doing, again, anything that's going to impede comfort and function for this population. They have multiple pathologies. So I think we've all seen the pictorial of the iceberg where the crisis is what you see at the top, but you don't see all the underlying issues. Their responses to medication is unpredictable. So just some key points about why they're different. Another key comment is most often it doesn't take much to cause them problems. So they'll have all that underlying pathology, and then you'll have an acute event that tips that iceberg over. So the important piece is we need to know what's normal aging and what's not, because assumptions can lead to incorrect diagnosis and treatment.
Great. Thanks, Mary. That's really helpful. It's a good way to start us off. Here, Shannon, do you have anything you want to say about geriatric assessment?
Well, I just want to thank Mary for her comprehensive overview of older adults. I always love listening to Mary. I wanted to explain a little bit more about how we do comprehensive geriatric assessments within our health authority. We have a learning initiative or a best practice initiative called PIECES. And PIECES is actually a best practice approach to assessing older adults who have complex physical and cognitive or mental health needs, as well as those that have behavioral changes. And so it's a whole approach, and it really involves the entire team. So what PIECES is, it's actually an acronym, and it stands for addressing the person's unique physical, intellectual, and emotional health issues, but most importantly, working on or working towards strategies that support their capabilities, so where they are with their functioning, and paying close attention to their physical environment and how that is supportive, as well as their social self, so who they were prior to the event that's led to this assessment. So their life story, their social networks, and I'm paying close attention to anything that's important to them culturally, spiritually, or with their gender identity or sexuality wise or preferences. So that's the approach that we're using. And we are really focusing on this type of team approach. And when it comes to using PIECES, there are actually three questions that are really important. And this is why it's a team-based approach, because they're not focused on nursing or other allied health or come from a medical model. They really look at what's changed for the individual. So moving from what's typical to atypical presentation. So what is really different with them, and how has that affected them, or what are the risks involved with this change? And then what can we do to support them to improve or maintain their function? And we do not want to cause any harm or decline in their functional status.
Mm-hmm. I think that's such a great way for us to frame the work, because nurses love to have goals. And so if we have those goals in mind, that we're not going to impede people's function and their comfort, I think that's a really nice way for us to frame our practice. So thanks for sharing that. I find that mm-hmm. helpful myself.
Yeah. And just to add to that, in addition to PIECES, there's some other work called Serious Illness Conversation. And really, because these individuals are at the end of their life, there is a way of having a listening conversation with older adults and learning about their goals of care and what is most important to them. And it's really important that as healthcare providers, we truly understand what's important. And sometimes what's important to that older person is not necessarily a major intervention. It could be comfort, and it could be caring for them and making sure they feel safe and supported in their home or in their community. And it may not be offering major treatments that take them far away from their loved ones.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point, Shannon. And I think two important questions that we should be asking everyone is, what are your goals of care and how we can help, rather than getting on our solutions. we really have to look at the patient's goals. And Shannon, thanks for bringing up the typical versus atypical presentation of illness in this patient population. I think it's really important to remember that the typical presentation are the usual signs and symptoms, and the atypical presentation is no sign or symptom, unusual signs and symptoms, or the opposite of what you would expect. Typical presentation in this older adult population is age-related physiological changes. So like we talked about before, they don't absorb, they don't distribute medication the way other patient populations might. There's age-related loss of physiological reserve. There's interaction with those chronic conditions and acute illness. And there's often underreporting of symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
So, and just to give some concrete examples of those atypical presentations, we learn in our undergraduate programs the typical response to things like pneumonia, which are coughs, shortness of breath, production of sputum. Well, older adults might not have the metabolism to mount a fever. They might not have the musculature to cough, to bring up that sputum. And often the first sign and symptom that you'll see in a lot of those conditions is confusion. Because mm-hmm. often the system with the least reserve with older adults is their CNS. So things like MI, like a heart attack, you would expect that severe crushing, you know, we've all heard the elephant on the chest. They might not feel that. They might just feel basically unwell, generally unwell, and they might be confused because they're not perfusing their brain.
Mm-hmm. That's really helpful. Thanks, Mary. Could you, the fun thing about this podcast is basically I get to get all my own personal interests answered. And a favorite topic of mine is delirium. And I'm wondering if you could comment a little bit. I think, am I correct in saying that people across the lifespan are susceptible to delirium, but it seems to be that older adults in the health system particularly are really susceptible to delirium. Could you comment a little bit on this population and delirium?
Sure. So they're susceptible for a number of reasons, because of age-related changes and because of comorbidities, like other things that are going on with them. And that piece that we talked about where the presenting symptom may not be with the system that you're assessing. It might be in the system where there's least reserve. And with older adults, that's often the CNS. So because of these comorbidities, they don't have a blank slate. They have so many things impacting with the physiological piece as well as our ageism culture. So to see someone who's confused, and I'm talking about the general public and healthcare providers, we still assume that the patient has dementia. And the key there is to knowing the person, right? You absolutely need to know what the person's healthy behavior is to know if there's a change in behavior. And like Shannon will always say, is all behavior has meaning. So there's a reason why someone's responding that way. And we should be assuming that confusion, if we don't know the person, is a symptom of a brain attack, just like we are very good at responding to chest pain as a heart attack, right? So just the confusion can be an indicator that there's something that's causing an acute event with the brain. And I think the general public, we've used a number of words with this patient population. We talk about senility. I don't even know what senility actually is. Delirium is that acute change that can indicate an insult to a person's brain. And we need to pay attention to that, use the term delirium. So there's a way of screening for delirium. We use the CAM, confusion assessment method, within Interior Health. There's other acronyms, but basically you're assessing for an acute event and then investigating the cause, just as emergent as you would a patient with chest pain. So where with chest pain, we assume cardiac until proven otherwise, because we need to save the heart, right? Mm-hmm. Because you can't regenerate heart cells we need to change our thinking with the same way with a patient who's acutely confused, because we're saving we have a chance to save their brain.
And, you know, excellent, Mary, thank you. And I just want to add to that, jumping off of what Mary said, any time that I've ever been asked to assess an older adult, if there has been a change in whether it's confusion or they're just off, a red flag always goes up to be assessing delirium first, because there are three different types of delirium. And often the ones that always, you know, that the staff are keenly aware of are the hyper delirium patients. But really the ones that we need to pay more attention to are those hypo or the mixed. And the hypo are the ones that get written off as, oh, they're they've got dementia. And then immediately we're starting down a pathway to send them off to long-term care, whereas their central nervous system has least reserve at the moment when they're in a delirious state. And so if we could give them some time to recover and heal, potentially those individuals could go back to their home where they came from. And, you know, in my assessments, so I didn't give a lot of background into where I worked before, but I did geriatric mental health assessments on acute medical and surgical floors. And that was always the thing that I would be asking, what was their baseline before they came in? If they came from home, my expectation would be that they would return home. And if they weren't returning home, there had to be some significant issues in the home prior to them coming in that would lead us to having a different assessment of their needs from hospital, or a significant event that led them to need more care as we look at discharge planning from the hospital. The other thing when it comes to a mixed delirium, often family will come in and see individuals and say, oh, you know, they just seem a little off. Well, those would be the ones that we should really be paying attention to and asking those individuals, you know, were you experiencing some confusion, or do you know the time of day, and can you tell me where you are? And some of those references that they should be aware of, and asking them if they've had some periods of confusion. Most individuals, I think, if they're in the hospital and have had a surgery of some sort and are on some medications, will experience some type of a delirium. These are situations where individuals get into, and I think that older adults get painted with a brush that is unfair and unjust. And so we really need to pay attention to that. And finally, I just wanted to talk a little bit more about when a person is experiencing a delirium. Often, you know, I think that we need to give them time and space to do all the preventative or health promotion assessments and supports in place so that they can recover quickly. And those are things like, you know, reorientating them to the time and place, getting them up walking, encouraging them to drink more fluids, and getting them back on a good sleep-wake cycle, and supporting families to come in and educating families on what that might look like. And particularly that the ones that are agitated, can we get them up moving during the day and try to get them back into a normal routine and rhythm? And these are the individuals that I really worry about, because as we age, not only does our central nervous system reserve is impacted, but I think our resilience to bounce back more quickly. And I think we may need to be a little bit more patient and kind with this population.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, beautifully said. I'm wondering if you could tell us what are some important considerations for nurses in all care areas. So I know this is a broad sweeping question, but I think that all of us, unless I shouldn't say all, if you are a pediatric nurse or maybe a labor and delivery nurse, but most nurses in whatever care setting you are in, you work quite a lot with older adults. What are some important considerations for us to consider when we are assessing the older adult? So if I'm coming onto my shift and my patient is in the older population, what are some things I should have in the back of my mind?
Well, I think it's important to question our assumptions, like we've already talked about, and those barriers to promoting wellness in this older adult population are negative attitudes about them being able to improve. Like, and I don't hear this as often, maybe because people know my my biases. But I used to hear, well, Mary, they're 82. What do you expect? Yes, they're 82, but this 82-year-old was golfing yesterday and plays bridge. So age, it's never just your age, right? Absolutely, I pay attention to age, but we can't use the excuse of age. Another barrier is the focus of healthcare environments on disease treatment instead of prevention and health promotion. I mean, Shannon talks, advocates for health promotion all the time. We're still busy pulling people out of the river where we need to back that up the river to what's pushing them in the first place. Another barrier is the false attribution of symptoms of pathological conditions to normal age-related changes. So we need to know the difference about what is a normal age-related change and what is pathology. And then the belief that older adults are not capable of learning and implementing health-promoting behaviors. So that old adage of you can't teach an old dog new tricks does not equate to human beings. Absolutely, your brain changes and we learn things differently. And I think we have so many files in our brain, it's, you know, hard to find that one you're looking for as you age. But creativity, research has shown that creativity can actually increase as you age.
Mm-hmm. Shannon, I know you feel really passionately about good preventative care for older adults. I'm wondering if you could also comment on some of the challenges that we have in our system to provide excellent care to the older adult. I'm making an assumption, but I think I'm correct in saying that we don't always have excellence in care for this population. I think it is a place that we fall down a lot of the time, and we let our older folks down in the care, you know, the global we of healthcare. Could you maybe tell us some of your thoughts about good preventative care and any other challenges that you want to highlight?
Sure. And I think Mary highlighted a few of them. But the other things that I've really been thinking about a lot lately, you know, we've come through a pandemic and we're all very tired. And most of us are, you know, we don't have an awful lot of patience or time for others. And I want to encourage everyone who's listening today to really, when we get in that place of where we're feeling ourselves bristle, that's the moment when we need to actually stop and pay attention and take a nice deep breath and come at care from a place of empathy for another human being, but also for ourselves. We need to really, you know, be compassionate towards ourselves, that we've all been through a lot. And certainly when it comes to caring for older adults, if we can really support older adults and know that many older adults that are in our care are worried. They are worried that they are being painted with that brush that, oh my goodness, I'm not as strong as I used to be. I do need to help and support. Could this be the end of my life as we know it? And is my function going to deteriorate to the place where I can't return home, or that that things are going to have to change? And as we all know, none of us like change, right? And so change is hard to take. Some of us accept it and move through it in a more graceful way than others. Others fight the resistance, right? And I think this is where we need to really support each other, as well as older adults, with understanding that they could be afraid and that things will change, and that we also need to honor and respect their life story. So every older adult that's in our care has a story. They come with some tremendous gifts and of knowledge and skill that we should really be looking and harnessing, and how can we support and helping them up so that we can support them to improve to the best of their ability. And I feel quite strongly that we have not done enough from a general population public health perspective when it comes to focusing on that care of an older adult and sort of aging on a continuum. And one of the things that, you know, as a gerontological nurse, it's really looking at aging over a lifespan. You know, we didn't just get to be 82 or 85. There's a whole, you know, there's decades of lived experience and knowledge that we should be honoring because of that, and sharing that with others. And as nurses, I think we can really listen to older adults, and it would impact their practice in a different way. And it's a different way of learning and listening than through the traditional medical model that we've all been accustomed to. And when I think about preventative care, we've had for years the participation. So we know there's healthy eating and there's physical activity and all of those things. There's also other mental health well-being. So we know that social connectedness and staying connected with others is really important. Coming out of the pandemic, that's more important than ever, as well as attitude of how resilient we are and how we have come through. Older adults, they have years of experience, and how did they cope with tragedy in their family or something that has happened to them physically? What resources and reserve do they have? And I think if we shift our focus rather than on all the deficits to all the strengths that individuals have and that are in our communities and in our families, we could really change the trajectory of where we're going in our healthcare system. And that's where I think I would reach back to our public health partners and our population health folks and ask them to support us with this and supporting what does aging look like, and even how can we promote healthy aging across the continuum and honor older people for what they have contributed throughout their life. We didn't just get to live in communities without individuals stepping up and showing up and being involved in decision making, whether it's building roads or schools or houses or transit systems or whatever else we have in our communities. And older adults have been a contributing part of that, for better or for worse. And so we should be asking them, what did you learn? And I think if we listened more to the stories and had some different discussions, we might be in a different place when it comes to older adult care. You know, there's lots of really great models out there for older adult care, but our health system is not structured that way. And that's one of the things that I keep thinking about is, like, how could we build up our health system to be more inclusive of aging on a continuum rather than just on a focus of, oh, when you need care, it should be there. I'm afraid, though, that we're at a place in time where we have very limited resources, where that is actually going to be possible for many people. And so then we do need to have a different conversation about what are our strengths in our communities and what can we learn from those that help develop our communities over time.
So what opportunities exist for us to improve and change the ways that we care for older adults across the continuum? Are there a few places that you see nursing as having opportunity to thrive and help solve some of the problems that you've highlighted for us?
Well, I think, and again, I'm very biased, Allison. I think knowledge, gerontological knowledge, mm-hmm. is a tool for your tool belt wherever you work. There's older adults everywhere, even in labor and delivery, because families are coming in mm-hmm. now, right? We're actually allowing families into those venues. Shannon also brought up our public health and population health perspective, and we've done a great job at preparing for the beginning of life. Mm-hmm. We've reduced infant mortality significantly. We have a lot of supports for prenatal and moms and babes afterwards. We're only just now starting to talk about the end of your life and your options for the end of your life. I mean, we've left it up to, it's been a unpleasant conversation, I guess. But I think Shannon brought up the serious illness conversations. I think it's important to create that safe place to talk about what their goals are, keeping in mind their family and friends, their religion, their spirituality, their faith, community, all of those things, their ideology and attitude, all of those pieces that contribute to planning for the end of their life.
Great. That's super. Shannon?
Yeah, and I also agree with Mary. I really think knowledge is important. And one of the things that's always sort of baffled me is that gerontology has sort of been it's either a standalone course that is, you know, whether you want to take it or not, you know, it's not an elective course, right? In nursing education. And so there's that, or it's peppered amongst all other courses and then it gets watered down. So you don't mm-hmm. actually understand the unique and specific differences of older adults. And so it doesn't stand out for individuals. I also think though that we could do a much better job with communication and in communities with promoting older adults and highlighting what older adults, you know, their knowledge that they have and what they can do, mm-hmm. but also in our secondary schools and those sorts of things, or even elementary school, and getting our community more involved in older adults. I think if we started to do that, we would start to reduce some of the stigma. And I think that there's been a lot of shininess around aging and never aging and all of that sort of thing over the last, you know, I'm in my 50s and all, that's all I can remember is how glorious everyone looks in a magazine and all of the this and that to make you look and feel younger throughout your life. And in fact, I would rather us all just embrace all of those wrinkles tell a story, and those stories, we've earned them and we should share them. And the gray hairs that I have, they show that that's just a natural part of aging. And what I would hope for nurses of the future is that we can really honor individuals and really respect, actually, it starts with self, honoring ourselves, starting with self and honoring who we are as individuals, and that we have contributed and we have things to share with others that might bring meaning to them and to their lives and to their career journey, right? And I would like to also encourage others to be very patient. This journey, you never know where you're going to go. There's no end point. It's just a meandering path, and we pick up gems along the way about how we age and how others age. I also would like to encourage nurses to listen. I believe that older adults are the professionals of their own body. So they are the experts of their body. Mm-hmm. And when they say that's not working, we need to listen to that and explore with them what else might we try that may work. And sometimes it's not a medication. Sometimes it is getting involved in a group or trying some sort of a different modality, whether it's massage or physiotherapy or any other modalities that work for individuals. And sometimes we have older adults that try other things such as cannabis or gummies or those sorts of things. And if that is working for them and that's what they believe, we need to work with them and step in mm-hmm. and lean into that. I think we've had a lot of resistance in healthcare for a really, really long time, and it is absolutely not serving us. It's as nurses, I think we're on our knees, and we need to sort of, instead of bowing down to that weight of that pressure, I think we almost need to link arms and say, okay, fair, we can actually do this differently by raising our gaze, meeting people where they're at and supporting them where they're at. When I think about ways for nurses, it would be to learn more about gerontology, to take some courses. There's some excellent courses out there and on gerontology, to learn more and observe more about older adults. There's all kinds of books, podcasts, you know, and resources that are available about older adults and what aging and all the, you know, I think, you know, aging is not something to be afraid of and something that we should really be embracing, and that there's a lot of wisdom in aging. And, you know, I'm in my 50s now, and I am really happy to be at this stage of my life. You know, I'm not, and yes, I have 50 years behind me, and I probably don't have 50 years ahead of me, and that's okay. You know, and I think we all need to start having some different courageous conversations about what that looks like, and not to be afraid. And one of the biggest things I learned really early on in my career. So when I started my career in nursing, I was in geriatric mental health. And my biggest aha is never regret, never have regrets. So if you're regretting something, unpack it, figure out what happened there, and correct that so that you don't have regrets. Because if you have regrets, you're going to carry that into your, as you age, and that's not a pleasant experience, and it manifests itself in so many ways, whether it's in your relations with others or your physical health or your emotional and mental health and well-being, or your, even your own abilities or confidence in yourself and what you can and can't do. And so I would encourage everyone to sort of unpack your regrets and figure out how to correct that if you can, or at least come to peace and terms with it, and right or wrong. So, or whatever it is, it may not be a wrong, it just might be a different way that makes you feel more happy and content with things. So yeah.
I think you, Shannon, you talked about the value of gerontological expertise. And historically, I think, I mean, older adults have not been valued. We value the productive, productive working member of society. But they have a lot to contribute and a lot more than we would ever assume. And I think, like, historically, older adults haven't been valued. And as association, healthcare providers that cared for older adults or family care providers that cared for older adults haven't been valued. And I just think that, you know, on top of the your basic health education that you learn in your programs, having that extra layer of gerontological expertise, I think, makes you the most valuable healthcare provider out there, really. And the other piece that I heard you talk about, Shannon, was everyone who's cognitively, and well, I shouldn't even say cognitively intact, but I think we have to pay attention to people's right to live at risk, and where it might not be my choice to be choosing those choices, we need to honor people's choices.
Mm-hmm. So true. So true. And that's all mm-hmm. all of our patients across mm-hmm. the lifespan, right? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just one last thing, and thanks, Mary, for bringing forward the value of older adults. But I would 100% support Mary. I think that we've actually done a disservice to most of the healthcare professionals when we have not really shone a light and had a standalone course on mm-hmm. gerontology and aging, just like we did with pediatrics in our nursing. And I think that part of the issue why we see nurses leaving in droves, and particularly I work in long-term care, and I think that long-term care has sort of been the black sheep of the family. Well, nurses have left long-term care in droves, and I think a lot of it is we have more complex people in long-term care than we've ever seen before. We have some distinct populations in long-term care, and if you haven't been supported to understand what those distinct populations are and their needs and have those strong gerontological skills, it's going to be really hard to recruit and retain and maintain your workforce. And I think that we've seen it in long-term care for decades now. I'm talking over 20 years of my career mm-hmm. that I've seen these challenges in long-term care. And now I think we're starting to see it in acute care and community as well. And so, and until we start having more emphasis on gerontology and what the needs of this population are, and understanding, and part of the reason why I want to focus on that is not just older adult care, it's the study of aging on a continuum. Mm-hmm. So understanding all of those sort of signposts as you move through your age, when you're in your 30s, when you're in your 40s, and how those all need to be honored and respected, but each of them support the other in a development of healthy aging and understanding and growing to be our best possible selves, but also as healthcare professionals to have a better understanding of what care, good care, quality of care, and compassion looks like, particularly for those really vulnerable at the end of their life, when that's all they really want, to feel safe, They want to feel cared for and they want to have comfort. And it's not minimizing any treatments or interventions that they want, but we really do need to make individuals feel like they are safe in our care and that we will listen and respect them.
Yeah. And I think what greater privilege, Shannon, than to have the honor of supporting someone at the end of their life.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I've sat by many individuals at the end of their life, and it is a true honor and privilege to be there and to journey with them and their family to help them understand what's happening and to make that journey just a little bit more easy when you have some of that knowledge and skill towards the end of life.
That's great. You both have referenced or referred to some good courses out there. I'm wondering if you can point us to some of your favorite resources. If there's people out there listening, wanting to learn a little bit more, do you have some places you can send them? Is there I think there's a National Association for Gerontological Nursing. Is there a conference that happens? What would you suggest that people look for?
There's the Canadian Gerontological Nursing Association, Allison, and they have conferences, I think, every other year.
Mm.
There's a great website that I refer people, families, and healthcare providers to. It's attached to nursing. It's the Hartford Institute for Geriatric Care. And I think it's also important to mention to be discerning with some of this information, because some of it is evidence-based and others aren't.
Mm-hmm.
They have partnered with the University of New York, and they provided some great practical tools from research. Another one is the Canadian Frailty. Shannon, what's that one again?
Canadian Frailty Network.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, there's lots. And the other part is you could share, I don't know if you can do this, Allison, share mm-hmm. Shannon and my contact information, and people can contact us if they have specific questions, and we'll do our best to guide them.
Great. That's fantastic. Go ahead, Shannon. Sorry.
Well, I just wanted to also point out that within Interior Health, under the library services, under their guides, they actually have a subject guide called Seniors Health. If you can go to that guide, there are many different tabs in that guide. So one has databases and journals and books and so on. And under the web resources, there's all kinds of information there where individuals can go to get all evidence-based information on older adults. So I just wanted to point those out. The other sort of group that I belong to is the Canadian Coalition for Seniors Mental Health. So that coalition has done some tremendous work to develop some good evidence-based work around assessing delirium, depression, dementia, the three big D's for older adults. I support, you already said, the Canadian Frailty Network, the Choose Wisely. So anything around Choose Wisely, Canada, around medications and geriatrics, they have some Choose Wisely Canada. They have some great information on the Choose Wisely database as well. So I just put in the chat there the subject guide for seniors health in Interior Health. So that has a lot of information that individuals can go to as well under the library services.
Great. Thank you. That's such a super resource for people to know about. Mm-hmm. That's really helpful. We're coming to the end of our time. I've been so captivated by this conversation with the both of you, and I just want to make sure that you have an opportunity, if there's anything that you wanted to share with listeners today that you feel like you haven't had a chance to share, about things that are important when assessing and caring for the older adult, or work that you've been doing that you want to highlight for folks. I just want to make sure there's a moment for you if we've missed anything.
Well, I don't know if we've missed anything, but I would just like to really encourage all young professionals who are thinking about going into nursing to really look to those older adults, have some conversations with them, talk to them about their lived experience, and find out what's important to them. And I would encourage all nurses to look around your community with fresh eyes and ask the questions of who's contributed in your community. And then when they're in your care, ask those questions about contribution. My whole goal would be that we change our our views and our assumptions, you know, around older adults and know that there is value. And one day, remember, we may be that person in the bed. And how do we want to be treated? And what do you want people to know about you? And how do you want to be respected? And so those are the things that I would like to leave your listeners with as well. I'm more than happy to have a conversation with any nurse who's thinking about career and where they might like to go with their career and how they can get started in nursing, but particularly with older adults. I'm very passionate about that, as is Mary, and would encourage anyone. I think it's a wonderful place to work with older adults, and I've had a tremendous career in the 28 years I've been a nurse. So yeah.
And I echo Shannon completely. Often when people hear I'm a clinical nurse specialist in gerontology, they equate me with long-term care, but that's mm-hmm. not my area of expertise. I started out as an acute care nurse, and I didn't see that I was not interested in older adults. I was interested in episodic care. And it took a couple slaps across the face with seeing older adults from my community in acute care and our lack of expertise. And mostly what I saw was my lack of expertise. Mm-hmm. And really, I know that I caused harm to those patients, to those people, because I didn't have the knowledge and skills that I needed. So that started my passion. And I can tell you, as Shannon said, I would encourage those new nurses that this is the most rewarding role that I've ever had. And I'm very blessed to have the privilege of caring for this patient population, contributing to the care of this patient population.
I'm wondering if you would share something probably personal with me on your way out. Now, Shannon, I had this idea when you were talking about that you really learned about not having regrets in your life from the folks that you were working with. Could both of you share, maybe not your most favorite, but a favorite or a couple favorite words of wisdom that you've received from older adults who you've worked with throughout your career? Are there anything that really has stuck with you that comes to mind that you'd like to share? I'll say that I started nursing, I was 21 when I started nursing, and I had probably at least a dozen older women take my hand and say, wait to get married, wait another 10 years, wait and get to know who you are and build a bit of a life for yourself and then start looking. They said, it's great, you're out working, do that and really wait. And I did take that to heart, and that's impacted definitely some choices in my life. And I also have received a lot of skincare advice from older ladies, and that really has been taken to heart. This podcast is not supported by Nivea, but if someone would like to sponsor us, we'd love to hear. But it's almost always Nivea is what you're told that you use on your face. So those are a couple things that I could share. I don't know if anything comes to mind for you.
Well, one of the things that come to mind, and it's similar along your line, is choose wisely. And I know that that's one of the websites I refer to, but honestly, many older adults make good choices, right? And mm-hmm. stay active. So those are the two. So just, mm-hmm. you know, make good choices. And I think when that is making good choices, it's actually being thoughtful and thinking long term about your mm-hmm. choices rather than in the moment now.
Mary, anything on your mind?
Well, it's on the spot. Along the same lines. And I'm going to back to the beginning of my career as a surgical nurse, where if someone died, it was a failure, mm-hmm. especially on a surgical care unit. And I had an older lady tell me when we were talking about quality versus quantity, she told me, Mary, you can live too long. Mm. And I think that really switched my thinking about. And I know it's a cliche that we want quality of life versus quantity, but we've had this embedded as healthcare providers that death was a failure. And the other I hate cliches, but I seem to use them quite often.
Well, they're cliches because they're true. Yeah. Isn't that the case?
So let's have those open up safe places to have those conversations about how we would like the end of our lives to go.
Great. Well, I would like to thank you, Shannon and Mary, truly for your time. You're some of the busiest folks in our health authority. So thank you for making the time to come and share your expertise with us. It was really valuable for myself, and I'm sure for lots of our listeners. So thanks again. And I'll just say that very special thanks to the Interior Health Professional Practice Office for supporting this project. And you can contact us with any questions, suggestions for future episodes at professionalpractice@interiorhealth.ca. And a special thank you to the marvelous Dwayne Walwin, who is our sound editor and makes everything sound so smooth and efficient on his end. So thank you both. It's been such a pleasure to have you here.
Right back at you, Allison. Thank you for doing this.
That's all for this episode. Thank you for joining us today. We know you're busy and your time is valuable. Thank you for spending some of it with us. Thank you for your commitment to your profession and to your patients and being a part of the journey of building a culture of excellence around nursing in our health region.